Chapter 41. To be added by paying the fine. How that wretched old squire would rejoice at getting the little tenancy into his hands. He did not really require it, but constitutionally hated these tiny copyholds and leaseholds and freeholds, which made islands of independence in the fair, smooth ocean of his estates. Then an idea struck into the head of Nettie, how to accomplish her object in spite of her uncle's negligence. It was a dull December afternoon. And the first step in her scheme, so the story goes, and I see no reason to doubt it apostrophe, 'tis true as the light, apostrophe affirmed Christopher Twink. I was just passing by. The first step in her scheme was to fasten the outer door, to make sure of not being interrupted. Then she set to work, by placing her uncle's small heavy oak table before the fire. Then she went to her uncle's corpse, sitting in the chair as he had died, a stuffed armchair, on casters, and rather high in the seat, so it was told me, and wheeled the chair, uncle and all, to the table, placing him with his back toward the window, in the attitude of bending over the said oak table, which I knew as a boy as well as I know any piece of furniture in my own house. On the table she laid the large family Bible open before him, and placed his forefinger on the page, and then she opened his eyelids a bit, and put on him his spectacles, so that from behind he appeared for all the world, as if he were reading the scriptures. Then she unfastened the door and sat down, and when it grew dark she lit a candle, and put it on the table beside her uncle's book. Folk may well guess how the time passed with her till the agent came, and how, when his knock sounded upon the door, she nearly started out of her skin, at least that's as it was told me. Nettie promptly went to the door. "I am sorry, sir," she says, under her breath. "My uncle is not so well tonight, and I'm afraid he can't see you." H'm. "That's a pretty tale," says the steward. "Oh, I've come all this way about this trumpery little job for nothing." "Oh no, sir, I hope not," says Nettie. "Suppose the business of granting the new deed can be done just the same?" "Done? Certainly not. He must pay the renewal money, and sign the parchment in my presence." She looked dubious. "Glee is so dreadful nervous about law business," says she, "that, as you know, he's put it off, and put it off for years. And now today really I feared it would verily drive him out of his mind. His poor three teeth quite shattered, when I said to him, that he would be here soon with the parchment writing. He always was afraid of agents, and folks that come for rent, and such like. Poor old fellow, I'm sorry for him. Well, the thing can't be done, unless I see him, and witness his signature. Suppose, sir, that you see him sign, and he don't see you looking at him? I'd soothe his nerves, by saying you weren't strict about the form of witnessing, and didn't wish to come in. So that it was done in your bare presence it would be sufficient, would it not? As he's such an old, shrinking, shivering man, it would be a great considerateness on your part, if that would do? In my bare presence would do, of course that's all I come for. But how can I be a witness without his seeing me? Why, in this way, sir, if you'll oblige me by just stepping here." She conducted him a few yards to the left, till they were opposite the parlor window. The blind had been left up purposely, and the candlelight shone out upon the garden bushes. Within the agent could see, at the other end of the room, the back and side of the old man's head, and his shoulders and arm, sitting with the book and candle before him, and his spectacles on his nose, as he had placed him. "He's reading his Bible, as you see, sir," she says, quite in her meekest way. "Yes. I thought he was a careless sort of man in matters of religion." "He always was fond of his Bible," Nettie assured him. "Hark, I think he's nodding over it just at this moment, however, that's natural in an old man, and unwell. Now you could stand here, and see him sign, couldn't you, sir, as he's such an invalid?" "Very well," said the agent, lighting a cigar. "Who have ready by you the merely nominal sum you'll have to pay for the admittance, of course?" "Yes," said Nettie. "L.L. bring it out." She fetched the cash, wrapped in paper, and handed it to him, and when he had counted it, the steward took from his breast pocket the precious parchments, and gave one to her to be signed. Uncle's hand is a little paralyzed, she said. And he what with his being half asleep too, really I don't know what sort of a signature he'll be able to make. Doesn't matter, so that he signs. Might I hold his hand? Eh, hold his hand, my young woman, that will be near enough. Nettie re-entered the house, and the agent continued smoking outside the window. Now came the ticklish part of Nettie's performance. The steward saw her put the inkhorn on, says I in my old-fashioned way the inkstand, before her uncle, and touch his elbow, as to arouse him, and speak to him, and spread out the deed. When as he had pointed to show him where to sign, she dipped the pen, and put it into his hand. To hold his hand she artfully stepped behind him, so that the agent could only see a little bit of his head, and the hand she held. But he saw the old man's hand trace his name on the document. As soon as 'twas done she came out to the steward with the parchment in her hand, and the steward signed as witness by the light from the parlor window. Then he gave her the deed signed by the squire, and left, and next morning Nettie told the neighbors that her uncle was dead in his bed. ... She must have undressed him, and put him there. ... She must. Oh, that girl had a nerve, I can tell ye. Well, to cut a long story short, that's how she got back the house and field that were, strictly speaking, gone from her, and by getting them, got her a husband. Every virtue has its reward, they say. Nettie had hers for her ingenious contrivance to gain Jasper. 2 years after they were married he took to beating her not hard, you know. Just a smack or two, enough to set her in a temper, and let out to the neighbors what as he had done to win him, and how she repented of her pains. When the old squire was dead, and his son came into the property, this confession of hers began to be whispered about. But Nettie was a pretty young woman, and the squire's son was a pretty young man at that time, and wider minded than his father, having no objection to little holdings. And he never took any proceedings against her. ... There was now a lull in the discourse, and soon the van descended the hill leading into the long straggling village. When the houses were reached the passengers dropped off one by one, each at his or her own door. Arrived at the inn, the returned emigrant secured a bed, and having eaten a light meal, sallied forth upon the scene he had known so well in his early days. Though flooded with the light of the rising moon, none of the objects wore the attractiveness in this their real presentation that had ever accompanied their images in the field of his imagination when he was more than 2,000 miles removed from them. The peculiar charm attaching to an old village in an old country, as seen by the eyes of an absolute foreigner, was lowered in his case by magnified expectations from infantine memories. He walked on, looking at this chimney and that old wall, till he came to the churchyard, which he entered. The headstones, whitened by the moon, were easily decipherable, and now for the first time Lackland began to feel himself amid the village community that he had left behind him 35 years before. Here, besides the Sallets, the Darths, the Pales, the Privets, the Sargents, and others of whom he had just heard, were names he remembered even better than those. The Jixes, and the Crosses, and the Knights, and the Olds. Doubtless representatives of these families, or some of them, were yet among the living, but to him, they would all be as strangers. Far from finding his heart ready supplied with roots and tendrils here, he perceived that in returning to this spot it would be incumbent upon him to re-establish himself from the beginning, precisely as though he had never known the place, nor them. Time had not condescended to wait his pleasure, nor local life his greeting. The figure of Mr. Lackland was seen at the inn, and in the village street, and in the fields and lanes about Upper Longpuddle, for a few days after his arrival, and then, ghost-like, it silently disappeared. he had told some of the villagers that his immediate purpose in coming had been fulfilled by a sight of the place, and by conversation with its inhabitants, but that his ulterior purpose of coming to spend his latter days among them would probably never be carried out. It is now a dozen or 15 years since his visit was paid, and his face has not again been seen. March 1891. End of the Project Gutenberg text Life's Little Ironies. Fern by Gutenberg Edition.